Join us in a world where you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Sit back as we discuss hard-won lessons from the best and brightest that the personal defense and competition shooting industry has to offer. Let us help you help yourself, no matter where you are in your personal path. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by LuckyGunner.com and Federal Premium Ammunition. They paid for this, so you don't have to. Now here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by LuckyGunner.com and Federal Premium Ammunition. They paid for this, so you don't have to. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at BallisticRadio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, other things at Facebook.com/BallisticRadio. So it's weird, Joe. We're like in this sort of new...
The new digs.
New digs. And can people actually hear you this time or not?
They can hear me this time.
They can hear you this time. So it's like you're not the imaginary voice in my head anymore.
Nope.
Huh. That's kind of weird. So everyone, this is Joe. Joe, this is everyone.
But, hello, everyone.
Hey, guess what, Joe?
What's up?
This segment brought to you by Lucky Gunner and Federal Premium Ammunition. So, you know, they're paying for the show and also this segment. Whether there was a firefight or you do, in fact, want to worry about that little guy, you need more ammo. And when it's time to restock, you can't beat Federal Premium Ammunition at LuckyGunner.com. With a shipping department that's always moving at 88 miles per hour, if I order a case of American Eagle from Lucky Gunner on a Thursday, it's at my doorstep ready to shoot before the weekend starts. Head to LuckyGunner.com today to check out their in-stock lineup of Federal Premium Ammunition. Remember, unless you're on fire or drowning or possibly some other set of circumstances I have not considered fully, you can never have too much ammo. So joining us today for the very first episode of, I think, Season 7, which makes me just really weird and concerned, it's William April. Hey, William, how's it going?
Very well. How are you, John?
I cannot complain even a little bit, sir. So living the dream, I believe that's what we say when we regret not going to school and getting a real job. But you've got a real job, so why don't you tell people about that, and then we'll get into the show.
Well, as I always say, I'm a mid-career mental health professional from New Orleans, Louisiana, but I also do a fair bit of training on the side through my company, April Risk Consulting, where we spend quite a bit of time trying to get regular folks up to, as I say, up to the speed of the world. We do a lot of work on the insides of bad guys. How is it that violent criminal offenders think and how they become who they are? On my day job, I have a regular mental health practice, though specializing in folks with post-traumatic stress disorder and also folks with addictive disorders and their families.
Nice. I kind of almost want to ask if that's fulfilling or frustrating or probably a little bit of both, I would imagine. So.
No, I like both. They're really important. I get asked that every now and again, you know, which one do you like better?
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, each one makes the other enjoyable.
Cool. So let me ask you this. And what I kind of want to talk about first is there's something going on in, I want to say August, and I apologize if I'm getting the month wrong, but I believe it's August, that is near and dear to my heart. And I want you to tell everyone about it.
Yeah, August 17th and 18th, 2019 will be the fifth and final iteration of a training and fundraising event called Pollypalooza. This
mm-hmm.
year's edition is, of course, Pollypalooza 5, the final frontier, keeping up our nerd theme. It's a training conference about all the tactical good stuff that people need to know. But most importantly, it's a fundraiser for the surviving children of our departed friend, the late, great Paul Gomez of Gomez Training International, who passed away some years ago, and a bunch of us determined to raise money and do for his kids what he wasn't around to do. And this will be our fifth iteration, as all the kids are getting out of high school and into college and nursing school. And it's time to sort of pack it all in with the immense gratitude to everybody that's come and everybody that's taught over the years.
Well, that's really cool, man. And the thing I'll say to anyone listening, so if this is something that's interesting to you, I know that inside of the training community, it is incredibly popular to buy tickets last minute. And that simply will not do in this case. And I urge every single one of you, if you're going or you're going to gift tickets to someone that needs to go, or you want to support the event, do that now and often and early. I think people say that about some voting too, but no, in all seriousness, I can say with 100% certainty, the show would not exist were it not for the first Polypalooza training event. And a lot of what people are doing today, I don't think would be nearly as interesting or robust if it hadn't been for Paul Gomez. Do you mind talking about Paul a little bit?
Yeah, Paul was, you know, I often say that Paul was the tactical Zelig after the Woody Allen character. He was just always around. It seemed like if there was anything interesting happening in the training world, Paul knew about it and most likely had a hand somewhere in the mix. He always seemed to be in the background contributing really important but often hard to quantify pieces to a lot of really important developments in the kind of modern civilian training context.
Right.
He was an ex-military and ex-law enforcement man, of course, and had a really developing training business himself when he sort of suddenly passed away. You know, somebody once said he was the hard drive of the industry, that he just seemed to remember everything and really critical things. And he was a connector. The numbers of people that were introduced to each other by Paul and have gone on to have lifelong friendships is really amazing and, frankly, kind of a tribute to him.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because I was, you know, I was incredibly influenced by Pat Rogers, and something that if you talk to any of the people that knew him was he was really good at connecting people as well, like-minded individuals and, you know, people that could be useful to each other. And I wonder if one of the measures of really the people that leave their mark or the people that are influential in meaningful ways, not in the Instagram way, if it's that ability to connect to other people, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's very interesting because it requires one that a lot of people like you, you know, that you just can't alienate that many people. But also, frankly, that more and more kinds of people find you credible.
Mm-hmm.
And so that when you introduce someone to someone else, that person takes kind of a privileged role in your judgment. You know, you say, well, if Paul liked this guy, he must have something to offer. And so it sort of jumpstarts relationships from just happenstance or, you know, passing in the night, as it were, to really thinking, well, this could be significant. And strangely enough, a lot of them turned out that way. You know, Paul was a broad and expansive thinker about a huge variety of things. And other than connecting people, he was really good at connecting ideas. You know, he just seemed to have just tons and tons and tons of kind of what we call betweenness. He always seemed to be right there in the middle of things and connecting people in ways that brought them together much more quickly and frankly more centrally than they would have otherwise.
Well, and so you mentioned that he was kind of involved in a lot of different things. So he was, you know, and I know Craig Douglas is incredibly well-known and his ECQC material is incredibly well-known, but Paul was involved in that very early on, right?
Well, it was very interesting. This is back, 2005, maybe. Mm-hmm. I was talking to Paul and he said, hey, you got to come to this class. And I said, okay, what's it about? And he said, well, it's kind of hard to describe. I said, okay, well, who's teaching it? He said, you've never heard of him. I said, well, okay, sign me up. You know, it sounds ridiculous in retrospect, but it was Craig's first civilian class. It didn't even have a name, his first open enrollment class,
mm-hmm.
of what later came to be called Extreme Close Quarter Concepts. And, of course, is really, you know, not to buff it up too much, but it's really, you know, a revolutionary take on very close-range gunfighting for civilians.
Yeah.
And, of course, Craig has, you know, gone on to be the industry titan that he is today. But you know, it was Paul's credibility that brought me to that class that didn't have a name, taught by somebody that I'd never heard of.
Well, and it's funny, too, because you fast forward almost 15 years now, and you are 1/6 of the ShivWorks collective. So I believe there's 6 of you, right? God, I didn't mess it up, did I? So And
not to belabor the nerd aspect, but it certainly is a wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Well, hey, I like nerd stuff quite a bit, so I'm not gonna judge you harshly on that. So I guess what I'm trying to say, guys, is that Polypalooza 5 is happening, and we will. I'll be posting the link frequently, and I'll have William talk about where you can sign up for that towards the end of the show. But I cannot tell you all enough how much I recommend going to that, and what a good time it's going to be. And additionally, if you're going to go, you should probably plan on camping, because that's like a whole separate training event all in of itself, I think, you know. So
yeah, there's some interesting things about this year's year's final iteration. One is that it actually includes Paul's birthday, which is August 17th. That was the original purpose. Having it in the middle of August was to be near his birthday, but actually the Saturday, the 17th and 18th, the 17th is Paul's birthday, so that's great. But also, we wanted to announce today that tickets will go on sale later today on Eventbrite. But also, we wanted to ask you if you Melody would put on your as I call it, your parent and child shooting class, but not in that order.
Yes, we would be more than happy to come out to that. I will make sure that our calendar is cleared. So thank you very much. That's
good, because that's a niche that doesn't have a whole lot of doesn't have a whole lot of options in it, and yours is the best one.
Well, thank you, man. We really super appreciate that, and that's quite the honor. So on that note, before I get like all choked up and emotional. We have to go to break. When we get back, we'll talk more with William April. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by LuckyGunner.com and Federal Premium Ammunition. Remember, they paid for this, so you don't have to. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977, a legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the new EDC-X9, which offers discriminating shooters 1911 match-grade accuracy, superior ergonomics and concealability with modern service pistol capacity and reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we're talking with William April, and we were talking about Polypalooza 5 and how incredibly cool that's going to be. And I guess sort of what I'd like to get into next is I invited you on the show last minute because that's how I roll, and I apologize for being who I am. I'm trying to change, I swear. But you sort of wanted to discuss random crime and what that is and what that isn't. Do you mind sort of getting in detail on that?
No, not at all. If you're interested in the sort of deep nerd aspect, this will be interesting. But a good few years ago now, there was a bit of a scandal in what passes for a scandal in science in a random number generation. Some very complex computer engines determined that almost all the random number generators weren't actually generating random numbers. That if you thought about them as points in a three-dimensional space, the computers were now finally powerful enough to rotate this hypothetical collection of points in space. And if you did it often enough, they suddenly lined up. So it turned out that random numbers weren't random. And it suddenly dawned on me that is a really good analogy for what most people think random crime is. If crime was truly random, right, a perpetrator and a victim brought together by nothing other than randomness, that would be really a whole different kettle of fish. What we have now is, people that are brought together, a victim and a perpetrator, by location, by time, by happenstance, but it's not random. It's an exercise of will on behalf of the offender. And it's our job to rotate the space, so to speak, to find the context where what they're doing makes sense. It's just too easy to sort of toss up your hands and say, well, it doesn't make any sense, so there's no sense trying to make it make sense. Well, it's our job to try and find the context. I was talking just the other day about some attacks that I had written about from Toronto, which is, by American standards, a very safe city. But these were some truly horrifying attacks where some young guys just walked around the city looking to shoot people. Well, the reason that's happening is because it's rewarding to them for some reason. It's not simply happening at random like a snow globe, you know, shaken up and then settling of its own accord. Now, that doesn't mean that the victims can control what's happening in any way, but it does mean that it matters to think about the motivation, the mindset, the psychology of the folks engaging in the crime.
So I guess let me ask you this. Would that be an exercise in, I guess for people that are listening right now, it's like, okay, this is not random. People are doing it for their own motivations. We might not, you know, some people might not understand their motivations, or it might take some effort on our part to understand their motivations. But is the purpose of understanding so that you can do the things that don't make you appealing to those individuals?
Well, to a certain extent, yeah, you can't hope to predict the ways in which you might satisfy a truly bizarre urge, right? You know, if someone's walking down the street looking to, let's say, kill someone who reminds them of someone else in their past, you can't change your appearance. You can never anticipate it. But it's more of a centering technique, as I think about it, for things to get at when you're doing the introspection about personal risk that I think a lot of people ought to be doing and aren't. It's very easy to say, I'm never at any risk. I don't do anything. Or I'm not a millionaire. Why would someone rob me? But figuring out what meaning you might have in another possible kind of moral universe is not wasted time. It's our job to figure out the ways in which the behavior makes sense, not to us, but the way the behavior could make sense to someone else, that it isn't simple, random motor activity, like a toddler lashing out. There is a purpose, and there is a motivation behind it, and it's almost like stretching. Stretching is good for muscles, and stretching is also good for our mindset. Try and figure out the ways in which some behavior that seems inexplicable can make sense to someone else, and then appreciating that, because the real secondary trap in this is thinking that if we can't find the motivation, then it can't be a very powerful idea, and no one else could be driven powerfully to do extraordinary acts because of it. Belittling other people's motivation is a really dangerous mental habit.
What? Apparently I just went through puberty right now on air. Let me try that again. Well, so do you think that, so I guess what is the net positive for us in engaging in this way of thinking? And you sort of mentioned personal risk assessment, so I'd like to segue into that, but as far as, so if we do this mental stretching and we begin to recognize that perhaps there are deeply held motivations that we are not able to experience firsthand, but it's important for us to acknowledge that they exist and are powerful, what does that get us, I guess?
Well, it's a really valuable exercise in training to view the world differently, right? If you're walking down the street on your way to work, and someone steps out of an alley, clubs you over the head with a socket wrench, and takes your briefcase, it seems random, unquote, and I'm doing air quotes so you can't hear them, it seems random because it wasn't something the victim had planned. It wasn't something the victim saw as happening that day on his or her way to work. But the trap of thinking of it as random is that the person doing it had no motivation, that it was almost just a reflex. Like a shark taking a bite out of something. But if you think about a complex web of events before on both sides of that event leading to this one point of intersection, why were we there at that time? What were we doing at that time? Is there anything that can be tightened up, so to speak, on our side of the ledger? And then what brought that person there? What were his motivations? What is it about us that made us appealing? This kind of thinking really helps because it lets us clear up what we can clear up on one on our side of the ledger, but also to get ready for the fact that we can prepare, do things that we call generally adaptive, right? Not necessarily to prevent that specific event from happening to us, but thinking in ways of problem solving so that we become generally better prepared.
Okay. I would imagine that that allows us to spend time in the moment, if we find ourselves in that moment, just instituting whatever predetermined actions we have decided are contextually appropriate for what we've recognized at that point, versus trying to figure out why is this happening to me?
One of the real dangers is, the inability to manage what we call the shock threshold.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Shock threshold is when something happens that's novel and startling enough that our arousal, our level of arousal spikes over the level of which we can consciously function. And you'll see people sort of stunned into inactivity. It's not that there's nothing happening upstairs. There's a tremendous amount of activity happening upstairs, but it's not purposive. It's not getting us anywhere. And in the worst case scenarios, it tends to be a lot of time wasting. I hate to even call them thoughts. It's more like Tom Givens refers to it as bleeding, like a sheep does.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this happening to me? I can't believe this is happening. This is so terrible. These are all thoughts that get us nowhere. And what we want to be able to do is as quickly as possible get our level of arousal below the shock threshold so we can start processing information and taking action. And mental rehearsal, planning for something, not necessarily something specific, but planning for something, helps at not being pushed past the shock threshold and not having our function deteriorate for long, long periods of time. I mean, it sounds like a cliche, but seconds do count. And every second you can steal back from a processing delay is a second you can do something that saves your life.
Well, let's hold that thought because we got to go to break. Right now we're talking with William April, and you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by LuckyGunner.com and Federal Premium Ammunition. They paid for this, so you don't have to. This segment brought to you by BigTexOutdoors.com. BigTexOutdoors.com is the best place for you to find all of your everyday carry needs at the absolute best prices. Maybe you need all the lumens from Surefire at the lowest price? No problem. Spend too much time alone in your room and now you need an RMR on your pistol? BigTexOutdoors.com has those. Glock accessories? Yes. Fast, cheap shipping, 100% hassle-free returns, all that and more. And best of all, BigTexOutdoors.com has Ike. He's a good man and thorough. I like Ike. Everybody likes Ike, and you'll like Ike too. Visit BigTexOutdoors.com today and find out what happens when every customer is a friend, not just an order. So we're talking with William April, and you were sort of discussing shock threshold and some of the things that we can do prior to finding ourselves in an event that could, possibly raise would be the correct term here. Raise our shock threshold. I get confused by raise and lower. It's like I'm turning the air up. What does that mean?
I understand what you mean. If you think about it as arousal, right, the level of excitement, if your level of excitement is zero, you are sound asleep. But at the other end of this kind of hypothetical scale, let's say your level of arousal is 10, you're completely overwhelmed. You just can't function. This is when most people, the old cliche, run in circles, scream and shout. They're not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a purposeless motor activity. And if you look at people involved in terrible and shocking events, terrorist attacks, natural disasters, there's a whole lot of pointless activity going around.
Mm-hmm.
The energy of which could be better used for doing things that are actually helpful and saving one's life. But if you're above the shock threshold, if your level of arousal is above the shock threshold, you just can't function. You can't process information. You can't make decisions. And if you look at people who survive terrible events and shocking events, they get right about the business of surviving very quickly.
Right.
They spend very little time in the goodness, why is this happening? And why is it happening to me phase. They tend to very quickly assess what's happening, but that implies not that their shock threshold is low, but that they've gotten back below it very, very quickly. Shock threshold is to a certain extent kind of genetically determined. It's part of what we call temperament, just kind of how you're wired. A great example is roller coasters. You either like them or you don't. There isn't much in between there.
Right.
And if you do, great. You can't understand why people don't. And if you don't, you can't understand why people do.
Right.
Well, those are just temperamental, but you can't account for it. If you didn't like roller coasters, but somebody paid you an extraordinary amount of money to become a roller coaster reviewer, you'd very quickly learn to tolerate them. Your strategies of dealing with it would get better.
Right.
And so we can get better at managing this shock threshold, even if we can't change it necessarily.
Well, and so I guess for a video example, something like that, and this might be a poor example, so please correct me if I'm wrong, but if you think of somebody like Clint Hill, who was the Secret Service agent in the Zapruder film of the Kennedy assassination, he was the only one that actually tried to do, well, not that others didn't try to do anything, but he was the only one that reacted quickly enough to actually make it to the car and cover up the president's wife and all that. And that seems like someone with an incredibly low, excuse me, incredibly high shock threshold, you know.
Right. Now there are people who are just going to temperamentally have a very high shock threshold, and so they're incredibly valuable in that kind of circumstance, that kind of profession. There's also a great example in the shooting by John Hinckley of then President Reagan. You can see a Secret Service agent wearing a really tragically dated suit, actually orienting his body toward the direction of the gunshots and spreading out. He actually raises his arms inside to increase the
Surface
sort of
area.
frontal area of his
Yeah.
body and try and block the bullets. Well, it's easy to say that's a reflex, unquote, but that's not a reflex. That is
No.
a learned behavior, and a behavior that's become somewhat automatized, but it's a learned behavior. That means his brain is working. He's not shocked. He's certainly not above his shock threshold. He is functioning, and functioning in a way that actually let him catch one of the bullets. Very tough job, but an application of skill and will to make it happen.
Well, and that's sort of something that I don't think a lot of people really recognizes. You know, you see examples of people doing things that it's like, oh, that makes sense in that situation. But like being able to override, for lack of a better word, some of the natural responses, not responses, reactions that, you know, people tend to have inside of those situations, that is kind of a rare animal, yeah.
Yeah, well, that word, that word natural is one you couldn't see it, but that was me cringing on this end.
I said it on purpose to make you cringe so that you
Yeah.
could tell people why that's wrong.
Well, natural, I often say natural responses are often not what they're cracked up to be. I mean, drowning is a natural response. Learning to swim is highly unnatural. Learning to float is highly unnatural. Sinking to the bottom is natural.
Right.
So when you think about harnessing and making use of natural things, there's not that much traction to be gained there. People sometimes offer the weird advice, be ready for anything. Well, that's something that literally cannot be accomplished. How can you be ready for anything? But what you can get ready for, you can get ready to be ready. You can get ready to be more adaptive. You can get ready to handle stress better. Even recognizing, hey, where is my shock threshold? What am I like? And learning to account for it. Just like if you had a bad back, you need to learn to account for it to do what you want to do on a daily basis.
Well, so
And
how would people go about that?
putting yourself under stress is really the only way to do it. And being ruthlessly honest about your performance under stress. Most people avoid it, especially, high stress levels. If you think about something like a pistol match, the only possible consequence is that you won't do as well as you thought you would. Now, everything after that is internal.
Right.
Well, I might not do as well as I thought I would, and then I would feel embarrassed. I might not do as well as I thought I would, and then somebody would laugh at me.
Yeah.
Right? All those things are internal. In terms of outcomes, there aren't that many outcomes in a pistol match. But people avoid it, and they've built up in their minds how bad the stress is going to be to experience, and so they stay away from it. There's this false goal with stress. The goal is zero stress.
Right.
Well, you can't function under zero stress. If there was no stress, we wouldn't get out of bed in the morning. Stress is just the body responding to demands placed on it. And dealing with high demands placed on the body is a habit. And you can get into the habit of managing stress so well that you become good at it. Masoud Ayoub, right, the legendary instructor from Masoud Ayoub Group, competes all the time in
yeah.
all kinds of pistol disciplines that he's not particularly interested in,
mm-hmm.
just for the competition.
Yeah. And he does incredibly well. I mean, he does incredibly well for a young man, and he is not a young man anymore.
No, and a certain part of that is habituation
yep.
to the stress of competition.
Mm-hmm.
He's now so familiar with it that he feels it, responds to it, manages it,
mm-hmm.
rather than being overwhelmed by it. And that is a goal that just about everybody can get to.
Right, right. And that's just through sheer practice, yeah? I mean, or I hate to use the word, but inoculation?
Yeah, simple repetition. Hmm. Right, of feeling stress and still performing, right? Feeling stress and getting used to employing means to reduce your stress in the moment to where you can function. Watching people try to relax just before they do something stressful has always struck me as incredibly bizarre and counterproductive.
Hmm.
What you're doing is not relaxing, right? Just before you're about to jump off a diving board in a competition or start a wrestling match or engage in any kind of competition, you're not relaxed.
Right.
And yet you'll see athletes, even elite athletes trying to relax. Trying to focus and trying to relax are two different things. Really elite performers worry about focus, not about relaxation, because tension or arousal, as we call it, is going to take care of itself.
That's a good place to Let's put a pin in that for a second, because we got to go to break, and then we'll talk about risk assessment, because we wanted to and we haven't yet. So we're talking with William April. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by LuckyGunner.com and Federal Premium Ammunition. They paid for this, so you don't have to. So we're talking with William April, and we were discussing shock threshold and stress inoculation, all these things. But you mentioned something in the second segment that I sort of want to get into in this last segment, and that is just risk assessment. And I don't think most people do that, not realistically. Do you?
No, not really. I mean, some of it is, what called just failure of statistical understanding. People seem to grasp things that always happen.
Mm-hmm.
Things that never happen make sense. And things that happen half the time, sort of 50-50 outcomes, make sense to people. But everything in between those sort of markers is sort of lost in a slush of mistaking them for things that happen either more often or less often than they do. There was a bit of a statistical kerfuffle about the last presidential election, because one prediction beforehand was that there was only a 30% chance of a certain candidate winning. And people presumed as if something with a 30% likelihood never happens.
Yeah.
Well,
it happens
about a third of the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it happened in that case. We've got a lot of funny internal math to overcome when we think about risk assessment. Your individual risk assessment, I often say the quickest way to get at it is think that if you were going to kill you, how would you do it?
Hmm.
And that means identifying things that might be exploited by someone else, not by you, but by someone else. And I'll hear people sort of blow it off, meaning they're converting it into a very, very low or even zero probability state by saying things like, well, I don't have anything, or I don't do anything. Well, yes, you have things, and yes, you do things. You're just not identifying them as something someone else would want. I'll have this as a response fairly often. Well, I'm a housewife. I just stay at home. I don't encounter any risk during the day. And I say, well, that means you're at home alone in a neighborhood that's virtually deserted from when the school day starts to when the work day ends. That doesn't strike me as zero risk. And just because you don't have a pile of gold bars in the kitchen doesn't mean you don't have something of value, even if that means your own sexual subjugation, kidnapping, and murder.
I was going to say that sort of falls back into the thing that we were talking about in segment two, as far as you and your quote was, you can't predict the ways you might satisfy a truly bizarre urge. You know?
Absolutely. You know, we can't think of naturally those kinds of situations because we don't think that way.
Mm-hmm.
We never think that way in our entire lives, but that doesn't mean someone else isn't. And so, you know, when we say, well, I don't have anything or I don't do anything, what we mean is that we haven't thought deeply enough about what we have and what we do, because we haven't found the context in which it does make sense to somebody else to come to our house and do bad things. And so in our minds, that converts to a zero probability outcome, that just cannot, will not happen. And that's a dangerous delusion. It's our job to think deeply about these things so that we can appreciate the fact that unlikely doesn't mean not going to happen.
Right.
Everything rare is rare until it happens. I wish I could remember who said the quote, but somebody once said, if it happens to you, the likelihood was 100%. Just some kind of fundamental probability problems that we have inside our own minds, but also how we view ourselves and that failure of perspective taking, right?
Mm-hmm.
It takes a pretty fair degree of mental flexibility to take the position of someone that would look at you as someone to kill. That's pretty hard. Most
right.
of us go out of our way to be nice people and nice to other people. But getting to the point where we can accept the fact that there are vast numbers of people who don't share that point of view, and that we share the world with them,
well,
that's tricky.
Well, luckily, I have made enough people angry at me to my face that I completely understand that someone might want to do that. And heck, some of the times it might even be deserved. So I guess I'm lucky that way.
Yeah.
But
you have no problem imagining people wanting to kill you?
Not even a little bit, honestly. I've lived with me my entire life, and that seems fair. So, but for average people, though, or for well-adjusted people, you know, it seems like folks really have a hard time with that. And it also seems like there's this massive disconnect between violent encounters, whether they're lawful violent encounters or not, and what those occur over. So someone, and my best example of this is, Jared Reston's second shooting, where he's chasing someone that's a shoplifter, stole a pair of jeans, and catches the guy after a 100-yard or 200-yard chase or something like that, and gets into a fight for his life. And someone says, well, I can't believe he shot that person over shoplifting. It's like, no, he shot that person for, shooting him in the face. Like, but people seem to connect things to one another that aren't connected. Have you noticed that?
Right. Sure. They'll draw the link between the kind of relative merit of what started the situation, unquote, and the eventual outcome. Well, I often say that when the fire department shows up, they don't run in circles looking for the matches that started the fire.
Mm-hmm.
The fire is the problem, not whatever was incident to the beginning of the fire. And so, I often ask people, are you willing to fight to the death over a fender bender? Most people say, well, of course not. And yet there are people that are.
Yeah.
And even a lot of people who would deny that they'd fight to the death over a fender bender or a parking spot get in confrontations over fender benders and parking spots that can absolutely turn lethal.
Mm-hmm.
And don't think of themselves as the kind of person that would do that even while they're doing it.
Right.
And so, thinking about this sort of stuff, right? Like, let's say, somebody did take an interest in figuring out how they're wired, and they said, well, hold on a second. I do have a very strong sense of right and wrong. I'm not the kind of person that lets things go easily. Well, you need to know that as you walk through the world.
Yup.
And you need to figure out ways to intervene before you get out of hand in situations like that.
Well, and that's, I think that's a good note to end on. We've only got about a minute and a half left. If people want to train with you, where can they do that? Would be my first question.
Well, you can go to aprilriskconsulting.com, and also the same name on Instagram is a good way to get at little things I post up 5 to 7 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
But also I've got this great opportunity coming with sales for Polypalooza 5, August 17th and 18th in Ohio, and tickets will go on sale today, actually, on Eventbrite. Eventbrite.com, and those are the greatest places to get access so far.
Perfect. And that was going to be my second question: is where can people buy tickets to Polypalooza 5? So, and I have to say, your Instagram page is one of the most useful learning resources available for free to anybody. So if you're on Instagram and you're not following William, you're wrong, and I'm sorry for saying that bluntly, but you are, so you should be following him. Thanks so much, man, for taking time out of your day to come talk to everybody. Really appreciate it.
No, thank you very much for having me. Do appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries, dude. And I will be in touch after I'm done recording today, because we got to talk about some stuff. But thanks so much, dude. Be safe, all right?
Great, thank you.
All righty. Hey, make sure you check out our website, BallisticRadio.com, like our Facebook page at Facebook.com/BallisticRadio, and keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. Really helps us out. Remember, we're on Spotify. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week.